Mic check. Time for that mic check.
Mic check.
Now it's time to start the show. Now it's time to start the show.
Welcome to the Two Men Will Pack. Every week, running it back.
Beam and Web try to act like they know. Now it's time to start the show. Yo, for show. Let's go.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Two Man Wolf Pack. As always, my name's Adam, dialing in from Chicago, my good friend.
Brian,
today is Sunday, October 16th, 2016. It's been 19 days since that last podcast. We are serious about going back to weekly podcasts now that the Wolves are about to start regular season games in a couple weeks and currently in the midst of, in my opinion, too many preseason games, but we'll get into that in a little bit. Special news this week, Brian.
The special guest?
Yeah. Dave Benz will be calling into the podcast very shortly.
Great friend of the pod, Dave Benz.
I know.
Olympic announcer and probably Olympic-level athlete, Dave Benz.
Yes. Dave Benz, obviously the Wolves television play-by-play guy. He's been on the podcast almost a year ago to the date, interestingly enough, and he's kind enough to be joining us again. Hopefully we can have him on a little more often because the one time we had him on was very fun.
Yeah, Dave's a great guy. He's as nice as he seems. Even when I see him around town at places like Target or at the Wolves games. Yeah, and thanks to the fans for sending in questions. We posted on Reddit, we got some good ones, and we're definitely going to work those in.
Absolutely. Before Dave Benz calls in, Brian, I think the fans want to know, how you been?
That's what they're all waiting for. That's why they're here. I've been good, man. I'm excited to get back to doing this weekly. I was just saying, the season starts in 2 weeks. I think it's actually, 10 days? I can't wait. I'm so freaking excited.
Yeah, Brian, the fans probably know this, but he's not the most excitable guy, I would say, and you're pumped. You're, like, legitimately pumped up.
Dude, yeah, I'm pretty juiced up for this. I mean, keeping expectations realistic, we'll talk about this in a bit, but, like, for a team that's, like, probably not going to make the playoffs, but at least we're, you know, going in the right direction and competing for that, and I think we'll compete most nights now, it's just nice. And, like, we have a good Vikings team. Things are really looking up.
Everything's coming up Minnesota.
Except baseball.
Yeah, we don't talk about the Twins. The Lynx, by the way, are in the finals. They're down 2-1, but they're playing tonight to try to even it up and bring back to the Target Center. And I think if they can do that, they're going
to
win.
I think so, too. It's hard to win Game 5 on the road, as we know. Yeah, they really crapped the bed in Game 3. They started out down like 20 in the first quarter. It was pretty tough to watch.
Yeah, not so good. Let's have Dave Benz call. Should we call
Dave
Benz?
Yeah, let's call Dave Benz. The people are tired of hearing us.
All right, our special guest today is the acclaimed television play-by-play broadcaster for the Minnesota Timberwolves, but for this summer, I knew him as the man that single-handedly kept me engaged in Olympic fencing. Our guest today is Dave Benz. Dave, welcome back to the podcast, and thank you for coming on once again.
Brian and Adam, great to be back on. Thanks for inviting me back on. I guess like I do the Olympics and you guys want to, you know, bring me out even more, so that's nice to know.
Yeah, you're basically Olympic certified. It's like you won a gold medal.
I don't know if I'd go quite that far. I didn't even get to go to Rio. I think most people know by now I was working out of NBC's headquarters in Stamford, Connecticut. It was a tremendous experience, and I got to work with some amazing people and really enjoyed being a part of the Olympic broadcast team, but it would have been a lot cooler to be in Rio.
Yeah, so tell us the story. How did you end up getting into this? I think you did, fencing, synchronized swimming. Was there anything else? Or do you have a background in sports?
No. No, I do nothing about any of that. I did modern pentathlon as well. Basically, I got a phone call about a week before the Olympics started, from a friend of mine who is, you know, a management level person at NBC, and called me at the last minute and said, hey, I'm just wondering if you're available to do some Olympic stuff, because the guy who was supposed to do the events that I did, whose name is escaping me right now, and I should know it, but he ended up getting the Los Angeles Rams radio gig.
Oh, wow.
So he had to bow out of his Olympic commitment because there was some overlap with the Rams preseason stuff. And with the Rams being brand new to L.A., of course, they were not very excited about having him miss any time. So he had to bow out of doing the Olympics. So NBC was shorthanded. They called me at the last minute. Can you do it? And I was like, well, let me see if I can work it into my schedule, which, you know, that didn't take me long to clear my schedule when NBC tells you to do the Olympics. but I didn't find out literally, guys, until 5 days before the Olympics started what sports I was going to be doing. And I couldn't honestly have told you, I really couldn't have told you, like, when a fencing match ended or the strategy. I couldn't have told you anything before it started. In fact, I made the analogy to my wife. I said, when I first started dating my wife, I took her to a baseball game, and she literally asked me after we got in the seat, she said, how do they know when it's the other team's turn to bat? Like, that was pretty much the level of knowledge I took with me into fencing when I first got the gig. And, you know, it was a lot of homework, and thankfully a lot of great people at NBC helped me out with research, and I worked with some great, you know, broadcast analysts, and I've gotten pretty good reviews, and I think, you know, I was given a little bit of a pass from the higher-ups at NBC knowing that they had put me in a tough spot. So, but overall, I thought I did pretty well. I'll tell you one interesting bit, though, that is Timberwolves-related. there was one of the big stories involving fencing was there was a female fencer named Ibtihaj Muhammad who wore the hijab during her competition, and she was the first American athlete to ever compete while wearing a hijab in any sport. Well, there were a lot of eyes on her matches. Like, we went live on main NBC when she was on, and people were really talking about it. She was focused on the Today Show. I mean, it was a big deal at the time. NBC was all over it. There were a lot of eyes on it, and she did fairly well in her competition. And while she was competing in one of her matches, I kept saying Muhammad, Muhammad, and at one point I started to say Shabazz. And I got so close, like I actually said, and then I caught myself and I pulled it back in. On national TV, I almost called her Shabazz. So I just was really glad that I was able to swallow that before it got out, because that would have not been good with a lot of eyes on me. But yeah, that's, you know, after years of saying Shabazz, it kind of tough not to say it.
It just feels natural. He's the one Muhammad in your heart.
Yeah, there you go, exactly.
Dave, what were those 5 days like when you got the call and knew you were going to do the Olympics to when you actually had to broadcast? I mean, was it you watching video, you talking to a bunch of people? Was it long days? I'm interested to know how you got up to speed on the sports.
Honestly, the first 2 or 3 days of it weren't even – I didn't even have time to research because they called me. I was in the middle of starting what was going to be a long road trip. I was supposed to – be doing Twins pre- and post games for a series against the Tampa Bay Rays that the first weekend of the Olympics. So I had to like get Foxed, and thankfully I'm very grateful to Fox. They were kind enough to, you know, let me out of doing my Twins commitment, my one Twins commitment for the whole year. They were kind enough to let me out of it and give me their blessing to go work for NBC, which was, you know, something they didn't necessarily have to do. So I was very grateful to them for that. And then, you know, the logistics of I had to get out to Connecticut, and I was already on vacation. I was in San Diego visiting my in-laws. I had to go buy some clothes. I had to, you know, I had planned on packing for a 3-week trip.
Yeah.
I was more worried about the logistics of getting everything done. And then finally, you know, I got 48 hours out from actually arriving in Connecticut. And the good news is, I think, you know, when I got there, and then I had like 2 days of research. So I probably had about 4 days total to be able to research, and it was a lot of YouTube stuff. It was I called my broadcast partner for fencing. Was a guy named Jeff Buchanz, who was terrific, and, you know, had long conversations with him. He pointed me in the right direction, things to read, things to watch. And then one thing I will say is, and believe me, by no means have I learned all there is to learn about fencing, and, you know, I'm certainly still a neophyte when it comes to the nuances of the sport, but it's not the most difficult sport to understand. I mean, it's two guys going at or ladies going at each other with, you know, whichever type of sword that they're using, and there are different rules for, you know, the different disciplines, whether it's the saber or the foil or the epee. But, you know, basically it's all right there in front of you. It's two people fencing against each other. And yeah, so I didn't have a lot of time really to get prepped, but the good thing is I could draw upon my background, having worked in broadcasting for, you know, 20 plus years, and the key in my industry is really to set up the color analysts and make them, especially in TV and radio, the play-by-play guy is more the star. But in television, it's more about making the color analyst the star and setting them up and asking intelligent questions and bringing up intelligent points. And
you're basically the Ricky Rubio of the team.
Yes. Yes, exactly. the most interesting thing for me, though, was going from the dynamic of fencing to synchronized swimming, because fencing, you know, I told a couple of people that the analogy for me was calling fencing was like driving an Indy race car, and calling synchronized swimming was like walking a poodle. It was two totally different things. And, you know, it was like synchronized swimming. Whenever I watched myself back on the synchronized swimming, I'd be like, talk less. Because it's all about, you know, people want to hear the music and see the transitions and all that. So it was totally different, but it was such a great experience. And I was so, like I said, fortunate that NBC called me, fortunate that Fox was able to clear my schedule and, you know, give me their blessing to do it. And, you know, we'll see. The running joke amongst everybody that does the Olympics I found is you never really hear anything from people, and you don't know really how good of a job you did until 4 years from now when you see whether or not you get the phone call again. So I guess in about 3.5 years, I'll know whether or not it is.
Well, obviously I'm biased because I listen to you all the time, Dave, but I thought you did a really good job with fencing. It sounded like you were an expert when I was listening, so it was very, very well done.
Well, I appreciate it. That means I faked it extremely well.
So I have a question about your off-season workouts. Last time we had you on the podcast, Dave, you had a chance to work out with Shabazz, and you said you're in the best shape of your life. I'm wondering if you've eclipsed that and you are now in the best shape of your life once again.
Yes. Same at the end of the, yes. I'm at worst on par with where I was last year. I'm probably a little bit better than I was last year, and my only hesitation on being definitive on that is just because the last, with going to do the Olympics, and then unfortunately my father-in-law passed away right after the Olympics, so I ended up having to spend a little bit of time out of town taking care of family matters, and so my workout regimen kind of got a little bit more jaded than I would have liked it to have been this summer. But, you know, I've continued to work out throughout, and when I haven't been able to work out with the trainer, he's been sending me workouts, and I do them regularly. So, I mean, for me, it's not the move that I made last summer to try and get myself in shape. It wasn't kind of like just a, hey, I'm just going to do this. It was really more about a lifestyle change. And so, I mean, that's kind of the life I'm leading now, and that's kind of how I see things going for as long as I got left on this planet, man. I'm trying to cheat Father Time as long as I can.
Yeah, you're a better man than me. I think when I normally get on a diet, I'm really good for like 2 weeks, then it's like it never happened.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably the majority of people. But it's the hardest thing for me has been giving up. Like, I love beef, and I'm really not allowed to eat beef. And the other day, my wife made steak, and I honestly hadn't had steak in like 3 months probably. And I was like, all right, whatever, I'll have steak tonight, because I, you know, a couple times a year you can give yourself a pass, but the discipline on the food, that's far and away the hardest thing. I mean, going and doing the workout, yeah, it's a pain. Sometimes you get up early and, you know, you're tired, you don't want to do it. But that's easy compared to saying no to, you know, the food and the cakes that come around and dessert and all that. That's where the hard part comes from.
Yeah, it takes strength to get the Dave Benz body.
Yeah, right, exactly, yeah. I wouldn't go that far. But, hey, I'm for 47 years old, I'm pretty happy where I'm at.
Oh, good. So, David, one thing that I've been really curious about is that you and Jim as a duo, and I would say each of you individually, have gotten a lot of love from Zach Lowe, who's probably my favorite NBA writer right now. Has this changed much for you guys? I mean, have you noticed you're getting more national attention? Are other folks outside of the team have started to kind of pick up on you and Jim as awesome broadcasters?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, it's getting a little costly slipping those $100 bills in an envelope every couple of months we're extremely grateful for the positive feedback that Zach has given us for a long time now. And are other people catching on? And I mean, I would say that you know, we have received a lot of positive feedback, and a lot of people seem to like our work, and that makes me feel very humbled and very grateful. And, you know, I don't really know what to say other than that I'm extremely fortunate to have a job that I love, and I'm extremely fortunate to have a broadcast partner that I think is, if not the best, certainly one of the best in the business, and is also a very good friend. I think if you listen to our broadcasts, we have not had a lot to work with, unfortunately, in the 4 years that I've been doing the games. it's been some thin results, but you know, the future clearly is getting much brighter, and I would say that probably this year we're going to have a lot more eyes on us than we've ever had on us. And you know, I looked at Zach Lowe. You mentioned that, I'm sure you're referencing. He just put out his league pass for this year within the last week or so, and I don't know if we were fourth or fifth, but I know we came in top five, and I mean, that was a pretty big honor to, but hey, that doesn't speak nearly as much about Jim and I as it does about the fact that this team is going to be amazing to watch. But certainly Jim and I are excited to know that we're going to have a team that people are going to want to see. And I'll be honest with you guys, given the fact that, you know, there's a new president of basketball ops / head coach and Tom Thibodeau, and you've also got Ethan Kayson, who's come on as the new CEO, replacing Rob Moore. You know, there's a whole new hierarchy in the entire world's front office. On a lot of levels, I feel like this is going to be an audition year all over again for me, because, you know, 4 years ago I came in and I didn't really, nobody knew who I was or what I was about. And I felt like I really needed to come in and, you know, make a positive impression. And I feel like I'm back, not necessarily to square one, but it's going to be, I'm feeling some pressure. And the good news is that I feel pretty comfortable this time around, whereas the first time around I was like, all right, do I really know what I'm doing? I had called a lot of college basketball before taking the Timberwolves job, but I'd never done the NBA, so I was a lot more nervous. At least now I feel like I know what I'm doing. But, yeah, there's you know, a little bit of nervousness. Did I lose you guys?
Oh, you're still there. Good.
Okay.
Oh, no, you're
good,
still
good.
There.
I thought I lost you.
Yeah, so you're saying there's a little bit of nervousness, and obviously we want to see both you and Jim Pete do well, but not too well, Dave, because we don't want to see you guys leave.
Yeah, well, hey, I am not planning on going anywhere anytime soon. At the same time, if I was going to get a call from ABC or ESPN and they wanted me to do national games, I mean, you know, it would certainly...
yeah, you're going to do it.
Kevin Holland had a pretty good career track, so... If something like that were ever, I was fortunate enough to ever have that present itself, obviously I'd certainly pay attention to that. But at the same time, I'm in no hurry to go anywhere. This is a team that is going to be a whole lot of fun, and the nucleus is going to be, I think, you know, are they a championship contender this year? Clearly they're not. Clearly there's still a lot more growth that has to take place. But could they be a championship contender 2 years from now? I don't see why 2 years from now we're not sitting here on your podcast talking about the Timberwolves being a pick to, you know, challenge for the Western Conference, if not the NBA title. I really feel that strongly about the pieces that are in place. They need a little bit more seasoning, but this is a team that's clearly on the rise, and it's not going to be a team that I'm going to see anytime soon. I'm hoping I can be there for a nice long time, and I'm hoping we can see a parade going down, you know, First Avenue right outside of Target Center in a couple of years.
Yeah, we kind of have the same feeling as far as the timeline goes. Do you think, Dave, that they will make the playoffs this year?
This is a question I get all the time. Okay, here's the guarantee that I'm willing to make on that. I am willing to guarantee that this team will still be playing meaningful games in April. Whether or not that means that they're going to make the playoffs, I think if things go extremely well for this team, they could win 45, 46 games, and it puts them in. I think if they show a little bit of their youth, they could win, you know, 40 games and miss the playoffs by a couple. But I think it's going to come down to the last week of the season. I think they're going to be, going through it, I kind of look at it as there's five teams that are probably going to make the playoffs pretty comfortably in the Western Conference. And then that leaves five more teams that are going to be fighting for those final three spots. And I put the Timberwolves in, you know, with those other four teams. I think the five that are going to be fighting for the three spots are Minnesota, Houston, Memphis. Of course, I'm driving and I'm thinking of this as I'm going. Utah and Dallas. So I think that those five teams are probably going to be fighting for the other three spots. I think Oklahoma City, despite losing KD, I think they're probably still comfortably a playoff team. Portland's probably a playoff team. And then, you know, San Antonio and Golden State and the Clippers are probably locks. So, you know, you got those five, and then you got the other five fighting for three spots. And are the Timberwolves going to be able to grab one of those spots? I don't see why not. And, you know, certainly, hey, I don't want to cap this team either at 46 wins. I mean, I'm just trying to be realistic, but they've looked pretty darn good in the preseason. You got Tom Thibodeau coming in as a head coach who knows, you know, how to win games, and he's going to be – I think Sam Mitchell came into a tough situation last year, and I think the job that he did really was underrated for, you know, what he had to deal with and the fallout of Flip's unfortunate passing and trying to, you know, take over a team that – really, he wasn't the guy that had the blueprints for. But, you know, one of Sam's areas that probably cost this team a little bit was I don't know that he was the most creative guy, you know, when it came to in-game coaching and coming up with creative play calls when games were on the line. I think that Tom Thibodeau is probably going to show that he's got a little bit more in the tank in that area. And I think that, you know, with all the close games this team lost last year, that a lot more of those games are probably going to go this way this time around, and that's going to make a huge difference in the one-loss record.
I think you're right, and I think it's interesting. I mean, I hope people don't forget that we took a huge step forward last year going from, you know, what was it, like 16 or 18 the year before to 29?
That's 16 to 29, and, you know, I think that's a good litmus test for kind of this season.
Yeah.
If they can make another 13-win jump this year, which I don't think is unrealistic at all, that puts them at 42, and 42 got in last year. So I think playoffs are not out of the question, but I've also been around, you know, I've also been around long enough to say, hey, you can't guarantee anything. This team needs to take another step forward. They need to stay healthy. That's the thing that honestly scares the heck out of me, guys. I mean, overall, you take out KG and you take out Peck, and, I mean, certainly – you know, those were pretty big cogs that were missing for the Timberwolves, but you kind of knew going in that that might be an issue. But you take out those two guys, and overall, the Timberwolves had a pretty healthy year last year. And I'm kind of a little bit worried the pendulum might swing the other way this season, and I hope I'm wrong. I hope we have another, you know, year of good fortune in that regard. But an injury can derail things awfully quick, as we've seen in the last couple of years with this team. I mean, I think back to my very first season with the Wolves was, you know, the Kevin Love knuckle push-ups year and what kind of a lost year that turned out to be with the injuries.
Okay, so real quick on that, do you think it was really knuckle push-ups?
That is a multi-million dollar question that I honestly do not have the answer to. And, as far as Kevin's concerned, he says it was, and I have heard nothing to the contrary to refute that. I know there's a lot of reason to think that that doesn't sound like such a great – the only thing I'll say about it is this. Honestly, if it wasn't knuckle push-ups, why would you – in the world would you use knuckle push-ups as your reason? Like, I mean, you know, there's a hundred things I could think of that would sound more legit. Like, you know, I slammed my hand in the car door or whatever. So, you know, that's going to be an unsolved mystery that I think is probably going to remain unsolved. But, you know, that the bottom line is that whatever it was certainly an unfortunate season for the Timberwolves to have that happen.
Fair enough. Good diplomatic answer. on another topic, you were talking about this a little bit. You think things will be different this year. What was your kind of initial reaction to the Tibbs hire and the moving on from Mitchell? Do you think it was, handled the right way? Were you surprised? Did you kind of see it coming?
That's a tough question because, you know, really, that's something that I wasn't involved in the conversations with, and I didn't get a look behind the curtain on all that. All I'll say is that there were a lot of organizations out there that was a guy that came into the offseason with, you know, a lot of pedigree, brings a lot of experience to an organization, has had a lot of success at a lot of levels, and also, you know, has a little bit of history with the Timberwolves, having been an assistant with the inaugural team back in the late 80s. So there were a lot of things to like, and, you know, if you've got a chance to bring in a guy that you think can take the organization to the next level, and if you don't feel like Sam is that guy, then you've got to make that move. And, again, I, you know, thankfully I don't have to be the one to make that decision. And I know that Sam came into, as I said before, an awfully difficult situation last year that you wouldn't wish upon anybody to have to go into that situation. And, you know, I think Sam early on in the year was having a tough time trying to figure it out. Like, does he try to do what he thought Flip would want to do, or does he try to do what he thinks is the right thing to do? And, you know, I think by the middle of the season, he kind of started to develop his own identity with the team, and the team started to win. I mean, the record the last, 15 and 17, the last 32 games, I mean, you know, clearly they started playing a lot better basketball late in the season. Of course, the, you know, Devils advocates will say, well, yeah, you played some games against some teams that had nothing to play for, too. So, but I don't believe that. I mean, you take a look at the win at Golden State and then the win at Portland. They close out that road trip with a 3-0 road trip to close the season. I mean, they were playing really good basketball at the end. You know, I'm just glad I didn't have to make that decision on Sam. And, you know, I thank Sam for what he did coming into a tough position. But I'm, you know, equally excited about having, you know, having Tom Thibodeau on board, because I think it's, you know, I think he's a great fit, and I think he's going to really bring a lot out of these guys. And you take a look at what the numbers were defensively last year. They clearly need to right some things that were not working last year. And, you know, this is a coach who really has made a trademark for himself and a name for himself on the defensive end. It might be exactly what this team needs to get to the next level.
No, I think that's true. I mean, it definitely, I don't think it was an easy call at any part, and I do think you're right in that we'll look back, you know, once we have some more time under our belts and say that, you know, Mitchell may have did what we needed him to do, maybe not the best in-game tactician, but, you know, the young guys got better. We came together towards the end of the season, and overall it wasn't a total wash.
Exactly. You know, and carried them through a tough emotional time. And hey, you know, the thing that gets lost in it, too, is, you know, the relationship Sam had with Flip. I mean, I'm sure it was emotionally and mentally difficult for him to be in that role after having to, you know, bury his friends. So, again, it's not a situation that I would have wished upon anybody. And certainly not a situation that any NBA head coach, nobody wants to take over a head coaching position in that way. So, you know, kudos to Sam for handling it the way he did, and I, you know, I hope that he finds success. You know, I'm sure we haven't seen the last of him as the head coach, and I know he's back in the analyst role with NBA TV this year, so who knows, we may even see him at Target Center at some point this year. And, you know, I have nothing but good things to say about Sam. He was good to me, and I hope he finds a lot of success going forward.
Absolutely. Dave, were you surprised by the lack of sort of splash that the Wolves didn't make in free agency? It appears they're going to start the year near the salary floor. They did obviously make some acquisitions in the free agent market, but none of them were marquee names, I guess.
I didn't know
what to expect going into free agency.
The one thing that he didn't do was he didn't go out and overpay for somebody. And, you know, I don't know exactly who he might have been able to get that they didn't get. I like the guys that they brought in. I mean, Brandon Rush, I think, could be a really nice addition, a guy that knows what it takes to win a championship. Cole Aldrich, a guy that is from Minnesota and wants to be in Minnesota and might have played his best basketball of the year last season. I like the addition of Jordan Hill. I think that, you know, they went out and they made a lot of little signings. They brought in veterans who actually can contribute, not just in practice, but can actually contribute minutes in the game. You know, would I have liked to see them sign? Sure, I would have liked to have seen them sign Kevin Durant. We knew that wasn't going to happen. The one guy that I thought maybe realistically that they could have had a chance of bringing in might have been Pau Gasol, you know, especially given Ricky Rubio's relationship with Pau. And I had heard through the grapevine that Ricky was campaigning pretty hard to convince him to come sign. But, you know, I don't know if Pau wanted to come into a situation where he didn't know what his role was going to be either. So I think Tom, you know, did exactly what he needed to do. He, you know, went out and made some minor signings, and now they're going to have, the cap's going to go up again next year. They're going to have a ton of cap space to play with, and we'll see whether or not next year they can go out and attract a big-time free agent, if that's what they feel like they even need to get. I mean, because, guys, let's be honest about it. It's a team that you've got Karl-Anthony Towns already. You've got Andrew Wiggins. You know, who knows what Chris Dunn is going to be. I think the X factor on this team this year could be Bielitsa. I'm curious to see what he's going to bring. I think he's looked great so far, you know, in training camp and in the early games. And I love his physique and his attitude. I think he's adjusted now to being in the United States. I'm really curious to see what these pieces are. And I wonder if, you know, that's the thing that Tibbs really wanted to do, was he just wanted to kind of assess and maybe bring in some veterans that could help without feeling like he needed to make a big splash. And, you know, let's not forget, they're going to have some options come the trade deadline. And, you know, they've got some depth in some areas now on this team that maybe, you know, maybe somebody's going to make some kind of an offer that'll entice Tibbs, and he can make a move to take on some salary because they do have so much space under the cap right now.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. But actually, I love your take on Belly because I think that, I mean, I totally agree. He's going to be one of those guys that we don't expect a ton from, but he finished last year really strong. He looks good in the preseason. But if he can give us, you know, 10 points, 5 rebounds, a couple assists, shoot 40% from three in, you know, 20, 25 minutes a game, that's a huge hole in our team, and it really lightens the load for Shabazz coming off the bench too.
Yeah, and I mean, they're going to have some punch coming off that second unit. You know, it's you're going to have once Dunn kind of gets up to speed, and you've got Boz and you got Belly, and I really like the Brandon Rush, and I like the ability of this team to be able to score. It's going to be really fun to be able to see, but yeah, to me, Belly is the X factor. If he can come out, he can create a lot of mismatches that other teams aren't going to, especially if he's going against other teams' second units. So. And last year, let's face it, depth was a little bit of an issue for this team, especially whenever Ricky left the floor. It seemed like, you know, the numbers, you take a look at the splits, and when Ricky was on and Ricky was off, they were not very good.
Right.
So if you can have, you know, Chris Dunn coming in and being able to not only hold down the fort, but, you know, help extend leads, that's going to be a huge change from a year ago.
For sure. So Dave, we actually opened up questions to some of the fans this week. So we let a lot of the Reddit users know that you'd be coming on. So we got some questions in from fans.
Okay.
That we wanted to ask you. So one of them was Reddit user Tokyo Dave wants to know, was there ever a time where you were right and Jim Pete was wrong, and what happened?
Okay, the only one I could think of, because Jim is right most of the time, the only one I could think of it is, and I don't want to call Jim out because I think that it's kind of, you know, I'm kind of splitting hairs here, but I can remember, I think it was last season, and it may have been in Boston, but there was a game where KG, like, just lowered a shoulder into somebody and basically laid him out and got called for the foul, and Jim was like, oh, that wasn't a foul, and the replay comes up, the replay comes up, and it was so blatantly against KG, and all I said was, I don't know, Jim, that doesn't look so good. So, you know, it was, but Jim and I, listen, I've learned so much from Jim, and I think that's the one thing I like about where our relationship has evolved to is, you know, I would have never felt comfortable even saying something like that on the air a couple of years ago, but I think now we've reached this comfort level now where, you know, I can kind of give a little bit of an opinion if I don't feel like I always have to agree with Jim. So I like the fact that our relationship has kind of evolved and matured to that point. I think it's only going to continue to get better.
Yeah, I think that comes through on the air that your relationship has matured. And as a listener, I appreciate it. It's very fun to listen to. We have another Reddit question, Dave. This is from Iron Man J. He or she wants to know how often you interact with players, and is a lot of it off the record?
I interact with them as much as I can because that's the only way that I'm going to be able to tell good stories on air and be able to know who these guys are. And this year it's going to be a little bit more of a challenge because, you know, it's Tom, you know, Thibodeau likes to keep things a little bit tighter to the vest, so our accessibility is going to be, I think, a little bit more limited than it was a year ago. But at the same time, that's not to say that there's not going to be ample opportunity, and I've already had plenty of opportunity to talk to a lot of these guys during training camp. So, yeah, I try to spend as much time with them as I can. I kind of draw the line at, you know, I keep it professional. You know, sometimes we're on the road in a hotel lobby. I might sit down and chat them up and hang out. But it's not like I'm going out to dinner with them or, you know, going out. Not that most of them are even old enough to go out to a bar, so it's not like I'm going out on the road and having a good time with them. But, you know, I try to build a relationship with them. I want them to be comfortable with me, and of course, a lot of it is off the record. And if there's any question about whether or not it's something that they feel comfortable with me mentioning on the air, I'll just ask them straight up, you know, can I use that on the air? And you build trust that way, and you build respect that way, and they begin to feel like they can trust you and share things with you, then that's only going to help you down the road. And at the bottom line, one of the tough things for me when I took over with the Wolves was a lot of my background had been working, you know, on the news side of sports. I'd always hosted, you know, ESPN Sports Center type shows. And so, you know, you kind of get that news bug, like you're going to break stories. But now in my role, it's not my job to break stories. You know, and a lot of times I'll see stuff come out that, you know, Jerry Zagoda will get a hold of, or John Krasinski will get a hold of, or, you know, somebody that writes a blog will get a hold of, or maybe somebody that has a podcast will get a hold of. And, you know, it'll be something that I've known about for a while, but it's not my job to break stories. It's my job to kind of know what's going on so I can be informed when I'm talking about things on the air. But, you know, and to be honest with you, I'm glad I'm not in the story breaking business anymore, because that was an end of the industry that never really excited me. I know there's a lot of people that really do take pride in that are really good at that. It was never anything that motivated me, so I'm more than happy to let that go.
Nice. No, I think it's good. I mean, it's obviously been a great, you know, addition on the team, and I think hopefully there's some strong rapport there. All right, so we got through our user questions, so now it's time for our favorite game, Would You Rather, which you played for us last time, I'm just going to assume that you loved it. It was probably the most fun thing you've ever done on a podcast.
It was the highlight, the highlight of my Timberwolves broadcasting career. I can't even remember.
Well, good.
So you can probably ask me the same questions again. I'll probably give you different answers.
We're not that lazy, but maybe when we do it next time. So okay. First one, would you rather try to wear tighter jeans than Rubio, or would you try and pull off a flashier tracksuit than Tibbs?
Well, I think the tracksuit would be more comfortable, so I'd probably go with the tracksuit. I don't know if I want to go that tight on the jeans.
I think that's the prudent answer. Next question. Would you rather broadcast full game while doing a Thibs impression or broadcast a full game doing a Ricky Rubio impression?
The thing about that is I have not spent enough time around Thibs that I think I could do a good Thibs impression at this point. So I'd probably have to go with Ricky. At least I've been around Ricky long enough to know, you know, he's pretty soft-spoken. And although that would be really tough for me, too, because Ricky is so soft-spoken that, like, just now I wanted to do a soft-spoken, and I can't even do it. It's just not my nature. So probably, I guess, that takes me back to Tibbs. I'd probably have to do Tibbs, but I'd have to do a little bit of my, you know, real Olympic homework so I could be ready to do more of a Tibbs impression.
Yeah, I think, you know, you got to do the homework, you know, to get the Tibbs gravelly voice, maybe smoke, like, 6 cigarettes. A little bourbon.
Go to bed at 1 a.m. and get back up at 4. And pee
right.
Gym.
You got to watch film for 24 hours.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's the move. Next one. Would you rather tell Kat that his beloved pet had just passed away, or would you rather tell Tibbs that his players aren't rotating well on defense?
Oh, I'd rather tell Kat his pet has passed away. Are you kidding me? Kat is the most easygoing, unbelievably gracious guy that, you know, I've ever met that is such a big star. I mean, he's such an anomaly. He's really, you know, the Timberwolves, it took them all the way until 2015 to get the number one overall pick in the NBA draft in the history of the organization, and they picked the right year to get the number one overall pick. I mean, Kat is just a home run in every way. And, I would never be really afraid to tell Kat anything because he is just so genuine and so nice. And not that I would want to have to try and defend him in the lane because that's when he's going to bring it. But, you know, as far as dealing with him, he has just been a pleasure to deal with. And, you know, I just hope he continues to stay that way throughout his career because you go down the checklist of the things that you want to see in a star player in any sport, and it's, you know, do they know are they talented? First of all, yes, he's off the charts. Do they know their game? Yes. Do they do their homework? Yes. Are they willing to put in the work to be great? Yes. Are they gracious? Yes. Are they humble? Yes. Are they smart? Yes. Are they charismatic? Yes. Do they like to be in front of the camera? Yes. I mean, just every single thing that you could possibly say positive about Kat, they're all A+. And he's an absolute home run as an individual, as a basketball player. And, you know, we talked earlier about, you know, would I ever want to go on to the next level and be calling national games? It's like, that would be really hard to not be calling Cats games every night. I mean, he's that much of a once-in-a-generation player. I'll share a story with you guys. I know I'm kind of deviating from the would you rather, but and I you know, this will probably come up, I'm guessing, on one of the podcasts this year, but I spent a lot of time again in the Bay Area over the off season, and I was out there during the finals, and I went to a few of the games, and after game 5, I went into the Cavaliers locker room for a little bit, and a Cat's name came up, and I couldn't believe it. Like, Kevin just lit up when I mentioned Cat's name, and he said that Towns is going to be the face of the next generation of NBA players, that he's an unbelievable talent, and he said, you know, last year, referencing 2016 All-Star game, he said, you know, this past All-Star game was the last All-Star game that Karl-Anthony Towns will not be a part of in his NBA career. I mean, so it's the accolades are well-deserved. So I'm just excited to have been on the ground floor with him for his rookie year, and I, you know, hoping I can be there when he's able to put a championship ring on his finger, and I really believe that he's got that kind of drive, that he's going to want to take things over, and he's already said openly that he wants to be the leader of the team, that he's been the leader of every team that he's ever been on. He spent the summer seeking out advice from other great players around the NBA on how to be a great leader. So, I mean, he's just really, like I said, a once-in-a-generation type guy, and yeah, so I would not be afraid to tell him that his pet had died. I would not want to be the person to have to tell him that, but I think he'd be okay with it.
You know, that's all really reassuring to hear. From a fan perspective, which kind of Brian and I come from, we don't have too much media access.
We were in Salt Lake City last year, and we were in the hotel lobby and having a conversation. It was me and Zach Harper, who does the I Am Basketball podcast on CBS Sports.com, and, you know, I know he writes for them as well. And, you know, we were chatting up Cat, and some girl comes up to him and is like, are you a basketball player? And he's like, no, I'm a baseball player. I'm a pitcher. And he was just totally having fun with this girl, and it was, like, hysterical because he's got just such a great sense of humor. To see him, you know, really kind of just having fun with the situation. He wasn't doing it to be mean. He wasn't doing it to be cruel. He was just totally just having fun. And that's just kind of his nature. He's just such a, you know, he's charismatic and he's fun. And it's just, I can't say enough positives about him.
Good. Well, that's, again, very reassuring to hear. Would you rather try to go plate for plate with Peck?
So I guess I would have to go with the Andrew Wiggins public speaking
lessons.
And I will tell you guys, I think that this year you guys are going to be surprised, because the little bit that I've talked to Andrew already this year on camera, I walked away from Media Day and my biggest impression was made by Andrew. I really thought that Andrew has stepped up his game when it comes to, you know, being talkative, when it comes to being comfortable in front of the camera. So I'm looking forward to seeing a little bit more talkative Andrew Wiggins, showing a little bit more depth in his interviews this season. So bottom line is, I think Andrew's really picked up his media relations game. I think we're going to see a lot more of that this season. I'm excited about that, because I'm excited for him to kind of embrace that role, because I know Timberwolves fans are really excited to kind of learn more about him. And it goes against the grain with him, because he is really a reserved, kind of shy guy. But I think we're going to see more of that this year.
No, good. I mean, it's interesting, right? It seemed like there's been some changes in Wiggins. Brian Windhorst just had a nice piece about him a couple days ago where he interviewed him, and Wiggins was saying, you know, I'm way too big and athletic to be getting 3.5 rebounds per game, which is right. I think it's one of the biggest criticisms. So it sounds like he's, you know, making some changes off the court that I think will help on the court.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Tibbs obviously is going to be a huge, huge influence on that, and maybe already has in terms of the, you know, public relations part of it that we've talked about. So I think just all the way around, we're going to see much improved Andrew Wiggins both on and off the floor.
For sure. All right, Dave, this is the last one. This is a shout-out to our Reddit fans. Here's the question. Would you rather fight 100 duck-sized Kevin Garnetts or one Kevin Garnett-sized duck?
Wow. I feel like I've heard that question somehow in like a children's movie that my son has watched, that there was some kind of equivalent to that, although it wasn't KG. And I'm trying to think of what my son's answer was to it. I think my son said he'd rather take the hundred duck-sized, individual. So I guess I'd rather take on the 100 duck-sized Kevin Garnett's, because at least I'd be bigger and stronger. I think I would probably get, I'm almost certain I'd get my butt kicked by, one Kevin Garnett-sized duck. I might have a chance against the 100 duck-sized Kevin Garnett. Probably not, but maybe a little bit of a chance.
I think that's fair, because you're bigger than him. You can hopefully, kick him at least and get out of the way or escape when the attack
happens. And I feel like the bigger version might be able to eat me. The other one would, I might be able to kick him out of the way.
I think that's true. Well, that's all we had, Dave. I want to say thanks again for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have you on. And I think we need to have you back more often, man. I think once a year is not enough.
Well, I'm happy to do it anytime, fellas. Just hit me up. You know how to get a hold of me. And definitely, maybe we check in mid-season or so and see how things are going. But I'm just bottom line, I'm over the moon excited about getting this thing going. I can't wait to see how this team's going to come together. I think that, like I said, if we can stay healthy, there's going to be some good things to come this year, and there's at the very least going to be relevant games being played in April, which it's been a long time since this organization's been able to say that, so that should have everybody excited.
Absolutely. Yes, we're very excited as well. Dave, thank you for coming on the podcast. We really appreciate it. Have a safe drive back to Minneapolis. Hopefully we'll see you at one of the games this year.
All right, fellas. Looking forward to it.
And it's just Brian and I once again. Shout out to Dave Benz. Thanks for coming on the pod. That was fun.
Yeah, it's always great to have Dave on. He's got great stories, and it's cool that him and Jim get a lot of national attention now. I do think we are pretty lucky to have one of the best pairs in the NBA.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoy, obviously, the Wolves, but it's really fun watching it on TV, having entertaining play-by-play guy, knowledgeable play-by-play guy, and obviously entertaining and knowledgeable color guy as well, and Jim Pete. All right, well, it was fun. Shout out to Dave Benz, obviously, for coming on the pod. We really appreciate it. Shout out to everyone in that Reddit thread who gave us questions to ask Dave Benz. One of them cracked me up, by the way, Brian. He said, how does it make you feel that you're less valued as a listener than the international listeners? Which I thought that was pretty good.
Bye.
Okay. All right. Thank you.